everyone. How are you doing? I'm doing well, thanks. It's season 12, episode 26 of the Ubuntu podcast. Can you tell it's Friday evening? I'm Alan, and I'm here with Martin. Hello, Martin.
Bonsoir.
Ah. And Mark.
I was going to say it in Spanish, but I've forgotten it.
Buenas noches, Mark.
There we go.
Oh, dear. We should never, ever again record on a Friday night. It never works.
No, we totally should. I like this.
We learned this in season one, 11 years ago, not to record on a Friday. But here we are. Yes. So, Mark, what have you been up to?
I have been being a tourist in my own city.
A what in your what?
Which of those words did you not understand?
Well, all of it put together. What's going on?
Well, so I live just down the road from Oxford, and once a year there is an event called Oxford Open Doors, where they, various organisations around the city open up their buildings for you to go and have a nose around, basically. So there's lots of places which are sort of normally open to the public, but there's bits of them that you don't get to see, and there's some places where you normally have to pay to go in them, and they let you go in for free. And there's some other bits which are just never open, which you get to see on special occasions. So, for example, there's a room above some of the shops which was part of an Elizabethan coaching inn, and they've got they took off some paneling in the 30s and found that there had been some paintings on the wall that had been hidden for 300 years. And so that room is now preserved, and you can go and have a look at it on these occasions. And you can go into still is actually. It used to be the Crown Court, but is now like the Coroner's Court or something. But they've got a tunnel which goes to the old prison, which is now a hotel. But you can go down into the tunnel where they used to take convicted prisoners through.
Ooh.
Yeah, we went up the tower of the Radcliffe Observatory, which is in one of the colleges, and some other places as well. Yeah, you just get to go around and see all of the hidden bits of Oxford, which you never normally know about, which is really cool.
That sounds delightful. I love the idea of these like rooms that are well preserved that you just never see, and then suddenly you're allowed in them. Is this like an annual thing?
Yeah, they do it once a year. It's managed by a group called the Oxford Preservation Trust. It's just open to all comers.
You don't have to like book a book, or is it just like a queue outside or something?
There are certain things which they do where there's like a guided tour. Some of those you have to book in advance if they're really popular, or if there's like, yeah, if it's like a small venue. But most of the things you just turn up and they kind of manage people going in and out if they need to, or you know, you come back a bit later.
And do people like know that this is going to happen on a particular day and then come into the city from outside, or is it only for locals?
It's for anyone who's there. So I mean, there's always lots of tourists in Oxford anyway,
of course,
so they're all able to do it. But yeah, if you go there specifically, it's announced well in advance if you look on the website. Or the other thing we did actually was the Oxford New Theatre, where we've seen a few shows and comedians and stuff, they do a behind the scenes tour. So we got to see go up on the stage and see where all the stuff's sort of flown in and out, and go under the stage, and they've got a big big rotary system where the stage used to rotate, but they've built a new stage on top, but they've still got this old like ironwork system underneath for making it rotate.
Nice.
And there's a stream running directly under the theatre, and they have it sort of goes into a pool underneath their electrical workshop, which gets pumped out every now and then. So you're standing in their electrical workshop and there's this constant stream of running water, which is a bit unnerving.
Water in the electrical workshop?
Apparently the guy who built these theatres did that a lot. They all have some sort of system for getting rid of this water, which he built on top of. So if you're around, it's that weekend of September that it was. I've linked it in the show notes, but it will be the same weekend next year, the middle of September. So if you're interested in that and you're somewhere near Oxford, give it a go.
So, Martin, stole a laptop from Dell and hasn't given it back yet. And he's going to tell us all about his ill-gotten gains in this segment. That's right, isn't it?
It's half true. I didn't steal the laptop. I think I've had it far longer than I should have done. So way back earlier in this season, we covered the announcement that some of the Dell Precision 3000 lineup were available as developer editions, and developer editions in Dell speak means available with Ubuntu preloaded. And I made a witty quip about, you know, Barton listens to the show, so can he hook us up with a review unit? And it turns out Barton does listen to the show, and he did hook us up with the review unit, and go me, it was my turn to review a laptop.
Oh, we've outed you as a filthy thief. Sorry, Barton. This thing is like a Commodore Garden Dell laptop that's a decent spec. I shouldn't say Commodore Garden, but I mean, it's a laptop. It's not like a...
Mid-range, I think, is how you would describe it, right? I think when we read out the original announcement and we talked about it, Dell pitched it as, you know, it starts as like... I think they may have used the term budget, which was slightly misplaced, but it's relatively inexpensive in the great scheme of, you know, Dell developer edition machines. Specifically, this is the Dell Precision 3540. That's the model that I was sent. And I did receive a model from America Land, which I just point out now because there's some reasons why that's going to become apparent later.
Okay, so specs. Burn through these specs for us.
Well, I don't want to dwell on this, but it's an i7 CPU, and it's 15 watts, which will be important, but it's got things like Thunderbolt. It's got a discrete Radeon Pro GPU. It has 16 gigs of RAM, although you can order it with up to 32. The one I got has a 512 gig NVMe drive. It's a 15.6-inch 1080p anti-glare matte screen built into the webcam. There's a privacy screen. It has, this was interesting, I know Alan will have opinions about this, has a track pad and a track point.
No, I'm sorry, it doesn't have a track point. It has a nipple, because a track point is the thing on a ThinkPad.
Oh, is that a trademark term?
Yes.
Hush my dirty mouth. Okay.
So it's a decent spec machine.
Yes.
And it's not a thin and light, just to get an idea of what it looks like.
It looks like a laptop. It's not like the XPS 13 or the XPS 15 with aluminium, all the things. So I know, Alan, you've currently got a 400 series ThinkPad.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel this is an analog to the 400 series ThinkPads.
Right.
I don't know what the correct term is, but this has a plastic, in air quotes, case, but of the same kind of quality that a 400 series ThinkPad has a, in air quotes, plastic case, if you know what I mean.
Right. So it feels more robust. It doesn't feel like it's an aluminium case, but... It doesn't feel like it's cheap plastic.
No, you know, it's not bendy, flimsy plastic. It's well-molded, sturdy, you know, and it looks nice. It's got, you know, nice lines and curves and edges. It's utilitarian but attractive.
You've been using this as your daily driver, right?
I really have.
This is why I was alluding to you stealing it, because you clearly like this thing, right?
I do. And to sort of, you know, like not bury the lead, on a couple of occasions I've gone to the Dell website and sort of fantasy-specced this on more than, you know, one occasion.
So the spec that you've currently got, what price point does that come in at?
Oh, I think when I last did it, it comes out at about $1,300, whatever that is in your local currency. The base model starts at about $570.
Wow, that's quite a difference. Okay.
Yes.
Based on your experience of using it as a daily driver, are there particular things which you would choose a more expensive option on than the one you've got?
For my particular use cases, the only thing that I would go for bigger on is RAM. I mean, it comes with 16, and I've been quite comfortable with 16 gigs of RAM. If I was speccing my own machine, I'd probably go for 32, and I wouldn't change anything else about it.
What resolution screen did you say it had?
It's 1080p.
Okay, and you get that because it's got the right battery endurance for a 1080p screen. You've not got touch and not 4K.
The battery endurance on this thing is off the charts.
Okay, let's talk about battery. So it's not removable, right?
Correct.
But it lasts quite a while.
It does. So the first time I used this in order to review it, I actually took it on a business trip. And you were with me, Alan. We went to Arizona. So I took this as my work machine because I thought, we're away for a week. I'll put it through its paces. And I think we spent 5 days working with the customer that we were working with that time. And I only charged it twice in those 5 days. And I wasn't suffering with battery anxiety. It was pretty remarkable.
You did seem incredibly relaxed in Arizona, yes.
I was super confident. It was brilliant.
Yeah, I was envious. Talk about the chargers, because it's USB-C charging.
It is a USB-C charger, yes. I think it's a 45-watt USB-C charger. There is a barrel connector. So in the review unit, I got a 45-watt USB-C charger with interchangeable US and UK plugs.
Oh, nice.
So the USB-C charging works fine. And the bonus is it's also compatible with my headphones and my phone. So when I was traveling with this laptop, the only charger I was taking with me was the laptop charger because it could charge all of the things I cared about, which is also a plus point in my book and a peek into the future of what, you know, USB-C is all about.
It actually also makes you a good friend because I was sat next to you and every so often I could pull the power cable out of your laptop and plug it into my phone when you went to the loo. You probably didn't notice this. And then when you came back, I unplugged my phone and plugged it back into your laptop, which was a useful thing. So yeah, this universal power connector does seem to make sense.
Yeah.
You mentioned that it's got a nipple, but I know you don't use that. Was the trackpad good?
The trackpad was probably the only thing that wasn't stellar about this laptop. Uh-huh. So the keyboard was great. At no point in the time I was just using it did I think anything about the keyboard other than this is great. And I think you had a go on it and you were quite impressed by the keyboard, weren't you?
Yeah, I nearly stole it from you, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So the keyboard's great. The trackpad is above average, but not amazing.
Is it a clicky one or a tappy one or a buttons one?
Both.
Is it one big button or is it corners of buttons?
No, it's two. It's separated. So, well, it has four. So it has like clicky buttons in the corners of the trackpad, has actual buttons like you have on your ThinkPad, you know, between the trackpad and the nipple, you know, pushy buttons. It has the middle button as well, rather than emulated. So it has three actual buttons.
Right. And or you can just tap it.
Yes. And you can tap to click as well. Yes. And, you know, two taps for right click and all that sort of thing.
What kind of workloads were you doing on this? I mean, I wouldn't expect you to be gaming on this thing, but it's not got a rubbish GPU, has it?
Well, it's got two. It's got, it sounds like a hatchback from the 1980s. It's a Radeon Pro WX2100
Sport. Yes.
Right. With and that's got 2 gigs of GDDR5 RAM on it. So, you know, I think it's got eight processing units on it. There's an interesting thing about the GPU, which maybe we'll get to later. So it has that as a discrete GPU, and it has the Intel IGP as well, which is built into the i7-8665 CPU. And both perform admirably. Both are supported by the kernel and Mesa, so don't require any, you know, driver trickery. They just work out of the box.
Actually, well, let me interject for a moment there. You mentioned didn't require any trickery. What version of Ubuntu did it ship with?
It shipped with 18.04.
Okay, so you didn't need to have like latest bleeding edge kernel or something to support that GPU. It works on 18.04. Okay.
No, and in fact, when I first got the machine, I didn't even though I knew how to do it, I didn't upgrade to the hardware enablement stack. I just left it as it was shipped. So I didn't mess around with it. I just installed the apps that I needed and was using it like that. And it worked perfectly fine.
Back to the GPU. You were saying it has two GPUs.
Mm-hmm, it does. And I did get to play with that a little bit. You know, at the end of our trip, I was like, well, what can I do with this? So I was sat in a bar drinking Long Island iced tea.
No, that's unlike you.
Huh. I know. Shocking. I'd got the AMG GPU running GLMark. And in another window, I'd got the Intel IGP also running GLMark, you know, simultaneously on different GPUs. And I was doing two things here. One, to stress things, to see if the fans kicked up. And this is an important point. It was only when I was doing this, when I was running a high intensity workload on both GPUs, that I could hear the fans. So for the rest of the time, it has been utterly silent.
Hmm.
Yeah. And also that was the only time that I could actually see some significant impact on battery endurance when I was doing this.
So we've spoken before on Ubuntu Mate how if you've got like a discrete NVIDIA GPU and an Intel GPU, there's a nice tool for switching between and saying which one you want to use. So if you wanted to tell your Dell with an AMD GPU to use that, is that relatively straightforward, or is there some specifics you have to do to get that to be the primary GPU?
You need to know how to invoke that at the command line at the moment, but I might happen to be working on that application that you suggested in order to do this for not just NVIDIA. So maybe in the future there'll be a graphical solution, but at the moment you have to know how to articulate that from the command line and distribute those workloads accordingly.
Right, so by default you'll be running stuff on the integrated Intel GPU, but you can specifically run a specific command on the AMD one.
That's right, yes.
Right, okay.
And this thing has a fairly decent sized battery, but it doesn't look like it's got, like, it's not pregnant like my ThinkPad with a big bulge sticking out.
No, so it's four cells and it's 68 watt hours. And it's entirely enclosed within the form factor of the chassis. So it doesn't, you know, it's not an add-on, you know, or bulge outside of the chassis. You wouldn't know. And on the face of it, isn't particularly large, but the endurance is amazing. And I think that's down to the CPU and the screen. There's no touch on the screen. It's 1080p. Some people asked, what brightness was I running the screen at? Approximately 30 to 40% brightness was more than enough to comfortably, you know, see it.
You mentioned the CPU there. I just noticed something on the specs that it says it's running 1.8 gigahertz,
mm-hmm.
4.8 gigahertz turbo.
Mm-hmm.
So does that mean you've got a range of 3 gigahertz that you can go up if you want to?
Right.
Wow. Okay. I did not know that was a thing.
It goes lower than that as well. So 1.8 is the base clock, but it actually, when it steps down into, like, you know, idle, it goes as low as 800 megahertz.
And that'll be when you're, you know, ordering a beer or popping off to the toilet or something.
Yeah, emailing people or whatever, you know, doing something, you know, that isn't demanding.
Hmm. I know you've made a big point about the fact that the battery endurance is amazing and the little amount of charging you've done. Did you do any measurements or figure out exactly how long it lasted?
I did some, as in, I think one of the days we were working, I was kind of timing. I said, right, it's fully charged. I'm not going to use the power. I'm just going to see how it lasts. So spent an hour just doing the initial setup and installing some packages from the archive and some snaps. So that was 1 hour. I then spent an hour and a quarter syncing all of my Dropbox stuff, cloning all of my Git repositories, and I built a couple of snaps in LexD and Multipass whilst those other things were happening.
And while that was happening, you said you didn't really hear the fans until you taxed the GPUs. Like, while you were building software in LexD, which typically...
No, I didn't hear the fans at all until I was really, really pushing it.
Oh, okay. Sorry, carry on.
And I didn't feel any temperature on the, you know, on the keyboard.
It wasn't hot to the touch or anything?
No, not at all. And then I spent another hour installing VMs and downloading ISOs and setting up virtual machines. And at that point, the system was reporting I'd got 6 hours and 51 minutes left. So I'd been using it for over 3 hours, and it was telling me I'd got nearly 4 hours battery endurance remaining.
Hmm.
I then spent 2.5 hours making slides whilst chatting to family in Telegram and what have you. And at the end of that 2 hours, it said I'd got 4 hours remaining. And then I forgot myself and took it to my room and plugged it in and fully charged it again. So I kind of did the same experiment the next day. But it just goes and goes and goes. And I think I spent the whole day at the customer and I didn't plug it into the mains once.
I love the fact that you accidentally charged your laptop. That, you know, I accidentally forget my keys. You accidentally charge a laptop.
And this was probably its sort of most glowing feature for me. I really loved the fact that I could just use it and use it and use it and use it.
The key question I think we haven't addressed is the webcam. Is it an up-nose webcam or is it not?
No, it's a webcam that's in the top bezel of the display. It looks perfectly normal.
Sweet. Mark, we've got some questions from the audience. Are there any we haven't covered yet, do you think?
You've covered the power plug because it's USB-C. Oh, yeah. How heavy is it? Is it a pain to carry around all day?
No, like I say, equivalent sort of form factor to Common or Garden ThinkPads. So not especially heavy, not especially light. I've got a slimmer backpack that I use these days. It's perfectly fine.
Cool.
Overall verdict, yes, buy, no, don't buy. What do you think?
Yeah, I got an email today telling me you have to give this back right now. So after we finish recording, it is going to get packed up and sent back. But I'm seriously considering selling my current ThinkPad in order to buy one of these. Even though this isn't as powerful as my current ThinkPad, I've loved using it for the last month. So we went away for a week, but then it turned out I went to another thing I spent a week working in London. I took it with me there. I then spent a week in New York and I took it with me there. And then we went to Paris and I took it with me there. So even though I've got my own computers, I'm like wedded to this thing now. I absolutely love it. I can't speak highly enough about it. It's a fabulous machine.
So when this thing goes back to Dell, someone, the next reviewer, is going to get a well-traveled laptop.
Yes, it has. It's covered several thousand miles, this machine, already in its short life.
Excellent. So thank you, Barton. Thank you, Dell, for sending us that laptop. I coveted it while I was in Arizona as well. And I was sorely tempted to steal it as well. Thank you very much, Dell. Thanks, Martin, for trying that out. And now please do send it back because I don't want you to go to prison.
If you love the command line as much as we do, send us a command that will blow our minds and we might even mention it on the show. Send your command line love to show@ubuntupodcast.org.
And now it is time for command line love. We actually have two. One called JPEG Optim and one called Optiping. And what on earth are they? Martin, you put these in here. What are these?
Yeah, so last week we talked about the beta releases of 1910 for various flavors. And in amongst that was the flavor that I'm involved in, Ubuntu Mate. And one of the things we did was try and optimize the size of the ISO. And in so doing, I identified we've got lots of graphic assets that we ship and they were not necessarily optimized for size. So JPEG Optim and OptiPNG or OptiPing are two utilities you can use to point them at a bunch of JPEGs or PING files, PNGs, and it will, without reducing the image quality, we'll look at the coefficients of the encoding of those files and make them as small as possible and save you some space. And when you've got thousands or tens of thousands of images in aggregate, that can make quite a considerable saving.
Hmm. This is interesting because there are other utilities that do this. There's another one called Ping Crush, I think it is.
Yeah, I read about that when I was researching this, and I think that's like older and it's not. There are issues with it, I seem to remember, and that's why people were saying use OptiPing. So OptiPing, you can say, this is how much to analyze an image, and it will actually sit there and recalculate and recalculate. And if you've got a really large PNG, it can spend some time like recalculating the coefficients before it settles on this is the best way to do this particular image.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's great.
We love getting your feedback. If you've got a comment about something you hear on the show, why don't you drop us an email on show@ubuntupodcast.org.
It's always good to hear Dr. Laura introducing our feedback. Thanks, Laura. So now is time for your feedback. Simon C. emailed show@ubuntupodcast.org with some test data for Firefox Private Network. I'm located in Hawaii. Aloha. So I did some quick tests using speedtest.net and dnsleak.com to compare with and without the plugin on. The quick find is that the performance differences were not noticeable for web surfing, and it obscured my home and public IP as expected. Here is a spreadsheet if you care to look at the data and observations. Alan, I remember you saying you like numbers. I'm not going to read the URL out for this spreadsheet. I'll put a link in the show notes, assuming that he will make this spreadsheet public. But that's good to see. Thank you very much, Simon. Richard Addison also emailed us.
Do you have archive podcasts that go back to the first broadcast? Google is only showing me going back to Season 8, Episode 1. Also, I get an error message when trying to access your Ubuntu Podcast Telegram group link. The following protocols, TG, isn't associated with any program.
Ooh, that's interesting.
A couple of things there. So firstly, the best place to find our full back catalogue is on YouTube. If you go to youtube.com/Ubuntu Podcast, you should see all of our episodes forever. And the other thing is probably because you don't already have Telegram installed, I think.
Yeah.
If you install it first and then click on our link, then it should open our link in Telegram.
Good call. Christopher also emailed us some command line love.
This one has really been scratching an itch for me lately. A tiny Python script to add a file via CLI to recently used listings in the GTK file menus. The need arose when configuring i3wm to take screenshots by hotkey. The files get written sure enough, but I wanted to be able to then open them up quickly in a GUI application like GIMP or in a web browser. And he gives us a link to his script, and we'll include that in the show notes.
I don't understand any of that. What does that mean?
Huh, right. So in the GTK file picker, you know, the file open dialog, there is a section which says recent. So what he's doing here is he's taking screenshots in the i3 window manager and then running this script that pokes those files into the recently accessed files list for the GTK file picker. So when he goes to GIMP or Inkscape, he can just say recent that file open.
That's cunning.
Rather than having to file it on the file system. Yeah, it's pretty clever that. I like it.
Nice idea.
Gregory John emailed us.
In Season 12, Episode 23, you mentioned the goal to accelerate the growth of the Linux application ecosystem. I was wondering if WordPress to Linux app converter based on Ionic framework could be a fast and economic way to build a large number of mobile Linux apps in the future. There are some converters for Android and iOS, for example, apppressor.com. What do you think?
So what does this do? Does this take like effectively a website and turn it into a desktop app, or does it bundle like WordPress and all the other bits and bobs together in an application?
Yeah, App Presser sort of says that it takes your WordPress site and turns it into an app, but I've not tried it. It says they integrate with WordPress, though, so maybe it's doing API calls or something, similar to what the Moodle app does.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, I think given that there are a lot of people making web-based applications, and turning those into desktop apps via some kind of tool might be a way to accelerate that stuff, maybe, for some classes of applications, absolutely. Gary Williams tweeted at Ubuntu Podcast.
Alan, you mentioned you discovered LSCPU on the last episode. There's another useful LS command called LSHW, which will print an extremely detailed hardware roster for your machine, down to which memory is in which slot, CPU instruction set, and more.
Do you know, I have never had more people tell me about LS hardware until I mentioned I'd learned LS CPU.
Is LS hardware the new HTOP?
No, I think it's just... I think people were surprised that I had only just learned about LS CPU. And, yeah, there's all the others, LS USB and LS HW. But for some reason, LS CPU had escaped my brain. But anyway, thank you, everyone, all of those thousands of people who told me about LS HW. The thing that's worth noting is there's a minus HTML option for LS HW, which lets it spit out a report about your system in HTML format so you can open it in a browser and it looks much prettier.
I'll just lay down a tease that I've got a GUI love coming up soon with some work I've been doing in Debian on similar lines.
AGH0X01 posted on our YouTube account, which is youtube.com/ubuntupodcast.
I came for Wing Commander, hoping there was a Linux port. Yes, I know, DOSBox, and was disappointed.
No. Oh. Is this because we keep putting game screenshots and game titles in our show titles? Is that the problem?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's interesting. Those really nostalgic, popular game titles, we get a lot of people listening to those podcast episodes when we put those on YouTube.
How much do they listen to?
Like, considerably more than a usual episode.
Oh, okay.
Does this fall into clickbait or fake news? Which one of those is it?
I think comfortably both.
Good. Gilbert House posted on our Facebook page. Wait, we have a Facebook page?
Yeah, we do. I check it every week. This is the first time anyone has posted on our Facebook page for like 3 years. So well done, Gilbert. And Gilbert has this to say. How come the Ubuntu Mate posts get more likes than you do? Smiley face.
Is this the smiley face that he's put in there? Does this allude to the fact that you put lots of emojis in the Ubuntu Mate posts and we don't have enough emojis in the Ubuntu podcast posts?
That may be a factor, but I think what he's referring to is that I also post these podcasts to the Ubuntu Mate community and they get quite a lot of traction there, whereas it's tumbleweed in our Facebook group. As evidenced by Gilbert, the first person that's posted in our Facebook channel for years.
Right.
Well, we need to fix that. If any SEO and Facebook people want to get in contact and tell us how we fix that.
Oh, God, no.
The email address is joe@linuxluddites.com. Well, that was a big one. Thank you all for listening to episode 26. Do come back next time where we'll have more news, community news, and we'll probably record this on a day that doesn't involve us all falling apart while we're recording. That'd probably be a good thing.
That'd be good, yeah.
If you want a VPS, I'd strongly recommend you use bitfolk.com because they're lovely people and they provide hosting for the podcast. Other than that, see you next time.